Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll break down all of the games, preview all the games in Week 9 of the NFL this weekend. Plus, we'll preview Clemson and Louisville coming up later on with someone who covers the Cardinals. We'll preview next hour Florida and South Carolina with someone who covers the Gators. Break down that game a little more. I'll give you the most interesting games of the football weekend coming up as well. We got plenty to do. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. I don't even remember what I was planning to bring up last segment as we then got on the subject of geography and different teams and where they're located. If it comes back to me, I'll let you know. I don't even remember what we had planned for last segment. That was more intriguing to me anyways. But I do know that we talked last hour about Zion Williamson. And we also talked about last night coming off that Thursday night football game with the Jets where Zach Wilson does not look very good these last couple of weeks when the team's better without him. And along those same lines, combining those two stories, how about the fact that the 76ers are 7-2 and lead the NBA in offensive efficiency? Ben Simmons, you may be overplaying your hand. Turns out the Sixers don't need you. They're better off with you. And if you want to sit at home and they can continue to fine you and not have to pay you, go ahead and be their guest. All right? But otherwise, they're good. Number one in offensive efficiency, 7-2 record. They're doing okay. And that doesn't do well, right? That's like, someone calls your bluff and you realize you kind of overextended yourself. You overplayed your hand. Ben Simmons probably thought like, oh, yeah, they're going to be in big trouble without me. Turns out they're actually playing better. And the Sixers can look at them and say like, okay, you stay at home. Do whatever you want. We're not paying you right now. We're getting all this money back. And we're playing fine. So, yeah, don't age you. That is a tough pill to swallow. And then you have to come back with your tail. Eventually, right, you imagine you have to come back with your tail between your legs. Because otherwise, you're losing money sitting at home not playing. They have no reason to trade you. Team's doing just fine. So in the NFL, we have OBJ seemingly using, his power to get out of Cleveland like he had hoped. And yet, ironically, in the NBA, where this typically happens, Ben Simmons is unable to use his power right now to get out of Philadelphia. That's not working for him. So a little bit of a switch there in that scenario. All right, every Friday we get ready for the NFL weekend. We run through all the games. We preview the matchups, in this case of Week 9. First, we look back at Thursday Night Football. Then we look ahead at all the games on Sunday. Let's run through them now.
New York Jets at Indianapolis Colts.
Mention this off the top this afternoon. So quickly, just to summarize, for the Jets, like I said, for Zach Wilson, not a great look when the team plays better with guys like Mike White and Josh Johnson in your absence. And I know Zach Wilson's only a rookie, but you were the number two pick. Mike White, was undrafted, bounced around. Josh Johnson was not a first-round pick. He was playing in the AAF and the XFL 2 and 3 years ago. And these are not Aaron Rodgers and Pat Mahomes and Tom Brady replacing you. And the team's playing better with those guys. Does not reflect well on the young quarterback, Zach Wilson. Mike White got injured last night, supposed to be okay for next week. We'll see if that's the case. Who knows when Zach Wilson comes back or what this means for his development, at least as a rookie this year. On the flip side for the Colts, it just makes last week's loss even more frustrating to the Titans. You can see the potential. And I know the Jets are a bad team and you had them at home on a short week. But the way Carson Wentz played, Jonathan Taylor, how that offense can move the football. They choked away a game to the Ravens. They choked away the game to the Titans. Otherwise, we could be really looking at this Colts team differently. They would be in the playoff pick. They would have a playoff spot right now if they held on to those two leads. Blew double-digit leads in both games. Otherwise, this could be a lot different, Colts team. We could feel a lot differently about this Colts team in the AFC. You see the potential when Carson Wentz plays well like he did last night, takes care of the football. It could be a really good offense for the Colts.
Atlanta Falcons at New Orleans Saints.
According to reports, Trevor Siemian is going to start for the Saints against the Falcons. Now, for Atlanta, no Calvin Ridley. We saw how the offense played last week. Now you go on the road to the Saints, who have a top five defense. Seems like it's a tough matchup for Matt Ryan and the Falcons. On the road against the Saints, tough defense. But for New Orleans, this is the type of spot that, you know, it's one of those classic letdown spots. You just beat the Buccaneers in your building with your third-string quarterback. And everyone's feeling good about Trevor Siemian. But it's a little bit different when he comes into the game, middle of the game, as opposed to when you have a week to get ready for him, and now, you know, you don't get that element of surprise. He's thinking about it. It's a little bit different, too, for the quarterback when you're just thrust into a situation and you can't think about it and you just have to go out there and play, as opposed to this week. He knows he's the starter. He has to try to be the leader of the team. He's thinking about being out there Sunday, knowing he's going to play. The Falcons know he's going to play. It's just a different scenario. A lot of times we see these guys come in mid-game, have success, and then, you know, they're backups for a reason. They can keep you afloat for only so long. I'm curious to see how Siemian plays this weekend. Fortunately for him, he gets a bad Falcons defense. On the flip side for the Falcons, tough matchup for them against this defense without Calvin Ridley, with only Kyle Pitts, Matt Ryan coming off a bad game last week. But it is a divisional game. I think the Falcons do keep it close. The Saints oftentimes play a lot of close divisional games. This could be an ugly one. I don't know what the point total is. We may not get a lot of points in this when you have Trevor Siemian against Matt Ryan in the Dome.
Las Vegas Raiders at New York Giants.
So for the Raiders, you have to see how much this team can handle. Of course, we had the terrible story this week of Henry Ruggs. And I said yesterday in the show, I don't like how everybody, their immediate thought is football. Right? Like David Carr, brother of the quarterback Derek Carr, as soon as the news hit, he tweeted about how this shows his brother should be an MVP. Not really the time. That was not, I mean, it may be true, but my first thought when I heard of this terrible accident was not, wow, this makes Derek Carr look so much more impressive with everything he's handling in Las Vegas. That was not my first thought. The problem is when we're in this world where it's our job and all we think about, or it's our passion, all we think about is football, we kind of lose sight of the big picture that somebody just, you know, lost their daughter, their sister, their friend, whatever it may be. Put your football takes on hold, David Carr, at least right away. Right, give it a couple of days. Don't let that be your first reaction when the news breaks, talking about how it makes your brother look like a better football player. We don't need that. With that said, as we actually look towards this game, what Derek Carr said was probably accurate. David Carr, I always confuse them. What David Carr said was probably accurate, just not the right time for it. Right, there's a time and a place. Read the room. But point being, for this week now, they bounce back after losing John Gruden and have played even better. Now Henry Ruggs, for those guys in that locker room, he's a teammate, he's a friend. Josh Jacobs went to Alabama with him. He's probably known him for 6-7 years. Right? So, you know, and something like that happens. Of course, it's a big deal for those people that are in his life. And now you have to come out this week, try to go play a game on the road against the Giants, traveling cross-country, interim coach, no Henry Ruggs. I'm just curious to see how many blows the Raiders can take and keep coming back from a football perspective. They've had some disasters around that team away from the field this season. Can you keep coming back and giving me a good performance every week? Cross-country trip, early game for a West Coast team in New York. Let's see how the Raiders respond to the latest, in this case, tragedy around that team.
New England Patriots at Carolina Panthers.
So for the Panthers, not sure who's going to be out there. I think PJ Walker. I don't know about Christian McCaffrey. It's interesting from a betting perspective. I'll give you my picks an hour from now. Both teams are 4-4. The Patriots are favored by 3.5 on the road. Do we think New England? That means on a neutral field, they'd be a 6.5-point favorite. They have the same record. Do we think the Patriots are that much better than Carolina? I'm not so sure. I think the Panthers could benefit from P.J. Walker being out there because he's more athletic than Sam Darnold, so he adds another element to the offense, especially if Christian McCaffrey isn't around. And additionally, the Patriots on defense struggle in the linebacking core, so P.J. Walker could have some opportunities to make some plays with his legs. If you have Christian McCaffrey on the field, of course, that'd be a huge boost to this Panthers offense. And you're going to need that boost because P.J. Walker is still a young quarterback in terms of snaps in the NFL, and Belichick eats up young quarterbacks. He just did last week on the road against Justin Herbert, a much better quarterback. So for both these teams, both 4-4, both trying to fight for that last wildcard spot in each conference, it's a big game for these two teams. For Carolina, it's kind of dependent on who's out there. If you give me Christian McCaffrey, even if it's with P.J. Walker, I feel a lot better. If you're going to give me P.J. Walker and Chuba Hubbard, I don't feel so good. You give me Sam Darnold and Christian McCaffrey, I feel pretty good as well, even though Darnold has really struggled against Belichick in his career. We'll see who we get on the side of the Panthers and how they match up against the mastermind, Bill Belichick.
Minnesota Vikings at Baltimore Ravens.
It's like the line in the Godfather. Just when you think you're out, they pull you back in. It's the Vikings, same idea. So disappointed with the performance last week. Mike Zimmer has a losing record against backup quarterbacks in his career. That's inexcusable. With that said, it seems like this is the classic bounce-back spot. On the road against Baltimore when nobody is expecting anything from them, Kirk Cousins in his career is 5-19 in primetime. Maybe it's just that simple. He played terrible. You know, as a Vikings fan, I read up on the team. They broke down the film. There were at least 11 plays. I watched them all. At least 11 plays when there was a wide-open receiver down the field, and Kirk Cousins didn't pull the trigger and instead checked it down short of the sticks. 11 times during the game. He seizes up on prime time. He doesn't play well. It's why he's never going to win anything of substance in the NFL. He's not made for the big spots. With that said, this is now a 1 p.m. game in Baltimore where people won't be paying as much attention. It's not Sunday night against the Cowboys. You know, you're coming off that bad performance. He usually bounces back, and he gets the worst pass defense in the league. So the Vikings are reeling me back in here thinking that they could put together a good performance on Sunday. And also, this has the potential for a lot of points in this game. The last three road games for the Vikings have all gone over the total. And when I look at this, the Ravens have the worst pass defense, so the Vikings could have some success there. On the flip side, the Ravens have one of the best rushing attacks, third in the league. The Vikings have allowed the fifth highest yards per carry. So it's kind of strength versus weakness, strength versus weakness. We could see a lot of points. The Ravens will probably be able to run it all over that defense, and the Vikings should be able to throw it against the Ravens defense. We could see a lot of yards and points in Baltimore. Plus, you know, you have a lot of talent on the field. Lamar Jackson, Dalvin Cook, Justin Jefferson, so on and so forth. Could see a lot of points in this game on Sunday.
Cleveland Browns at Cincinnati Bengals.
These are two teams that are coming off bad losses. The Bengals lost on the road to the Jets. The Browns lost at home to the Steelers, scoring only 10 points. Browns are 500. Bengals are only one game better. The question really is in this one, who's going to step up? Right? They're coming off bad losses. They're both hovering around 500. Who do you trust more to play better on Sunday? I have to be honest. I trust Cincinnati more. Now, it helps that they're home. But also for Cleveland, OBJ, you're losing him this week. May not hurt on the field, but a little bit of a distraction. You lost last week against the Steelers, scoring only 10 points. You're going up against another top five defense on Sunday on the road instead of at home. You know, the drama around OBJ and his father and Baker Mayfield had a comment. They're just noisy. The Browns are noisy this week. Meanwhile, for the Bengals, everybody may be down on them because they lost to the Jets. I think they bounce back this week. So I trust Cincinnati more than I do Cleveland. It's an important game for that division. But these are two struggling teams. One of them is going to have to step up on Sunday. And also the reason why I can't really trust Cleveland is this is more from a betting perspective, but they have not covered the spread in their last seven games against divisional opponents, and they have not covered the spread in their three games against teams with winning records this year. Point being, in the big games, Cleveland still doesn't really step up. This is a big game. On the road against Cincinnati, I don't know if I can count on the Browns to step up on Sunday.
Buffalo Bills at Jacksonville Jaguars.
This game is going to get ugly. The Bills are favored by 14.5. Probably you should take Buffalo. The Jags have the worst pass defense in the league in a lot of categories. They're allowing a completion percentage of 74th. They allow the highest QBR in the league. And Josh Allen has thrown touchdown passes, multiple touchdown passes in six straight games. We saw Teddy Bridgewater, Tyrod Taylor, and Tua all throw for over 300 yards against this Jags defense. This is a terrible Jaguars pass defense, and now you're getting Buffalo coming to town. On the flip side, Trevor Lawrence has really struggled when pressured. He's the second worst quarterback in the league this year when he's been under pressure, and the Bills have the fourth highest pressure rate. So this is just a terrible matchup for Jacksonville. Buffalo can expose their weakness on defense, and they can take advantage of their weakness on offense. And the last thing on this game, Buffalo, again, from a betting perspective, they have covered the spread by an average of 10 points this year, which is the best in the league. The Jacksonville Jaguars have not covered the spread by 7 points, which is the second worst, meaning the Jaguars, even as bad as they are, still aren't matching expectations. They're still underachieving by that much despite being 1-6. And the Bills are still, we haven't caught up to Buffalo. They cover the spreads better than anybody in terms of points per week. They're 5-2. I'm still a little skeptical of them, but maybe it's time to give them their due. I think they go into Jacksonville and pound the Jaguars on Sunday.
Houston Texans at Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, not much to see here. You can't watch all the games on an NFL Sunday, so this is one you can skip. They're both 1-7. Tyrod Taylor comes back for the Texans. If you're Tua, you're playing for your job. The trade deadline has passed, but the rest of this season is going to be an assessment of you as the future quarterback. You cannot lose to either Davis Mills or, it looks like, Tyrod Taylor in his first start back since week two coming off of an injury. But he'll have a chance because the Dolphins are 30th in yards. They have the third worst defense. So Tyrod Taylor could have some success. The Texans are 8-1 all time against Miami, if that's worth anything. Just one of these games, skip over. But I'm just curious to see how Tua does because each week he's playing essentially for his job.
Denver Broncos at Dallas Cowboys.
We get the return of Dak Prescott. So that's the biggest story here, right? How's Dak going to look? Because I imagine, I don't know if they've officially announced it, but I assume he is going to be out there on Sunday despite Cooper Rush playing well. Now, he'll be without his left tackle, but the good news is the Broncos now are without Von Miller. And he's not the same Von Miller, but still tough on the other side of the football. You don't have to worry about that. That helps. But Dak returns, goes up against a Broncos team that you don't have to worry about the offense so much, but the Broncos do have a top five defense. So welcome back, Dak, going up against a good defense. But this Cowboys offense, we know it's been so good when Dak Prescott's on the field. They have scored over 35 points in 8 straight home games with Dak Prescott. They're favored by 10 for a reason. The Broncos, I think, will hang in there. Cowboys should win this one. Teddy Bridgewater is great as an underdog. I like a spot like this. He's really good on the road as an underdog, especially a double-digit underdog. I do think the Broncos will hang in there a little bit, but this is a game the Cowboys certainly should win, and the big story is just simply how is Dak Prescott going to look coming off of this injury that has, he hasn't played in a couple weeks. Bye week, held out last week. How is he going to look on Sunday? Because the Cowboys season is really going to hang on that fact.
Los Angeles Chargers at Philadelphia Eagles.
This line has moved because there are some rumors that Justin Herbert has a hand injury. Maybe that's the reason why he has been so lousy the last 2 weeks. He's coming off maybe the two of the worst performances in his career the last 2 weeks against the Ravens and against the Patriots. Granted, two good teams, but they scored 30 points total in the two games. He has 3 interceptions in the two games, QBR of 16 on a scale of 1 to 100 in the two games, and that's coming off a 3-game winning streak. So the Chargers have to figure out what's going on. I don't know if this has been something that has been exposed on tape. Right after a few weeks, teams have figured out what they like to do offensively. If they found a weakness with Justin Herbert, I don't know. But he's been terrible the last 2 weeks, as has this team. Now you get a bad Eagles team coming to your building. You got to try to win this game. But again, the concern is, Chargers actually have to go to Philly. But you get a bad Eagles team that you should beat. The concern is Herbert has some sort of hand injury that's holding them back. We'll see how he looks on Sunday.
Green Bay Packers at Kansas City Chiefs.
Not quite as big of a deal now without Aaron Rodgers. The big thing in this game is just you get a look at Jordan Love. If you're Green Bay, this potentially could be an ideal situation. Because there's no way you're going to bench Rodgers during the season, right? So this gives you that reason to get a look at Jordan Love in his first ever start. And just, let's say, hypothetically speaking, he goes out there and he plays well. And say Rodgers isn't available next week, and Love goes out there and plays well again, right? Then, okay, if Rodgers wants to walk this offseason, we got our guy. I always say, right, you don't want to give your backup an opportunity. In this industry specifically, it's very cutthroat. People are very neurotic. People don't like to take vacations because they're afraid that someone's going to fill in for them and take their job. You're going to be Wally Pipped. It's such a competitive field. Quarterback's the same way. Don't ever give your backup an opportunity to take your job. Just ask Drew Bledsoe. So for the Packers, they're 7-1, right? Kind of like the Cowboys last week. You can afford to maybe lose a game along the way, right, if things don't work out this week. But if they do, you get a good look at Jordan Love, and you either trade, you know, try to work things out with Rodgers and trade Jordan Love, or Rodgers is still unhappy at the end of the year. Say, okay, go ahead. Go leave. We got our next guy. Or you find out, nope, we don't have the next guy. Jordan Love looks terrible. But he goes up against a bad Chiefs defense on Sunday. You get a little look at him before you have to make that final decision. It could almost turn out to be a positive for the Packers here the next week or two.
Arizona Cardinals at San Francisco 49ers.
Interesting spot for the Cardinals here. If you go back and you look at Cliff Kingsbury, he always fades in November. Not only with Arizona, but go back to college when he had Patrick Mahomes. So the Cardinals are 7-1. They just lost their last game. Does this start the downward spiral for the Cardinals? Plus, Kyler Murray is he's injured. We'll see what we get from him on Sunday. Hopkins is injured. A.J. Green is on the COVID list. J.J. Watt is out for the year. Could this be the start of something bad for the Cardinals the rest of the way? And they go to San Francisco, and I think the Niners are still undervalued. They put it together and played well in the second half last week. They get the Cardinals coming to their building. Shanahan has always had success against Kingsbury. The big story to me is, number one, does Kyler Murray play, and how healthy is he? Because if he's not healthy, the Cardinals are in big trouble the rest of the way. And number two, how does Arizona look? Extra time to prepare, divisional game, because Kingsbury, kind of like John Gruden, his teams always fade second half of the year. It starts now. Can the Cardinals continue this run beginning Sunday in San Fran?
Tennessee Titans at Los Angeles Rams.
Sunday night football. The big thing for the Titans, no Derrick Henry. How is this offense going to look? Nobody has had a bigger impact outside of quarterbacks. No skill player is more responsible for an offense's success than Derrick Henry. He has almost 40% of their yards, which is the highest of any skill player in the league. How can you replace that? They're going to try with Adrian Peterson, but he just joined the team this week. Hasn't played all year. 36 years old. So I'm curious to see. My knock on Ryan Tannehill has always been, yeah, he's played well in Tennessee, but it's really easy when you're the quarterback to Derrick Henry's, offense. They don't ask a whole lot from him. He's got 10 touchdowns, 7 interceptions this year. Not a good ratio. Well, now it kind of falls on your shoulders, Tannehill, and you begin on the road Sunday night football against the Rams, who just added Von Miller to that defense. So the big story here, of course, let's see how the Titans look without Derrick Henry. They're 6-2. They have hopes of winning the AFC. That could have all been shredded with the Henry injury. I'm curious to see how they adjust starting Sunday without Derrick Henry.
Chicago Bears at Pittsburgh Steelers.
Justin Fields is coming off the best game of his career last week. Did not have Matt Nagy with him. So how are things different Monday night? Plus, he goes on the road to Pittsburgh. Steelers are top five defense statistically. So this is a tough matchup. This is going to be a little more difficult. On the road, Monday night football, bright lights for Justin Fields against a good defense that just held the Browns to 10 points on the road last week. And by the way, Ben Roethlisberger, maybe not the same quarterback now that he was once in his career, but he is 24-2 against rookie quarterbacks. You have Roethlisberger, Mike Tomlin. They usually don't lose games like this to young quarterbacks, especially at home, Monday Night Football. Justin Fields is coming off the best game of his career, but this is a big-time test for him coming up this week. And there you go, previewing all the games in Week 9 of the NFL season. When we come back, the best games to watch this weekend in football. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
I'm gonna put on my walking shoes tonight. Well, I believe in here cause you don't treat me right.
Coming up, the most interesting games of the football weekend. Get to that in just a moment here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Just gave our rundown previewing all of the Week 9 NFL games for this weekend. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. We'll get the opponent scouting report coming up in just over about 5-6 minutes. Catch up with someone who covers Louisville to look ahead to that game tomorrow with Clemson. And I'll give you my official picks for the football weekend coming up next hour. But every Friday, I also give you the five most interesting games to watch in the football weekend between college and the NFL. And it's time to do that now, sharing with you the best viewing options of the football weekend.
This is a tasty burger.
It's the Tasty Top 5.
I'm tasty.
Number 5.
Auburn, Texas A&M. I only put this at number 5. It's the only matchup we have this weekend between two ranked teams. They're somewhat similar, these two teams. Good ground games. quarterbacks that maybe are overachieving this year, two top 20 programs, both with still a chance, maybe a slim opportunity, but a chance to still win the SEC or at least get to the SEC championship. My concern for Auburn, they're coming off that win against Ole Miss last week, and they were one of my picks, but Lane Kiffin said this week for Ole Miss, hey, 9 of our 11 offensive starters are injured. So I'm curious for Auburn, right? That was at home, at night, banged up Ole Miss team. It was a good win, no doubt. But can we use that win to try to project what's going to happen tomorrow when they go up against a Texas A&M team that maybe is actually a tougher challenge than what Ole Miss could bring to the table this past week? But I put that at number 5. On paper, it's the best matchup, the only one between ranked teams, SEC football, yada, yada, yada. I put it at number 5. Number 4, we go to the NFL. In fact, let me give you number 4 and 3 at the same time because they're on the list for the same reasons. Number 4, I say Titans-Rams, Sunday Night Football. Number 3, I say Packers-Chiefs, the Sunday late window game of the day. Same reasons why. I'm curious to see the Titans without Derrick Henry. How can you replace him? We've been talking this afternoon about that exact thing. Trying to replace Ben Simmons. Sixers have been fine. Trying to replace Zach Wilson. Jets have been fine. Doesn't reflect well on those guys' careers or their role with the team. Similar here, but I think on even a larger level. Derrick Henry is the most important person to the Titans. Aaron Rodgers is the most important person to the Packers. They're both unavailable. So how do the Titans look without Derrick Henry? Sunday Night Football on the road against the Rams. The Rams are favored by a touchdown for a reason. And for the Packers, how does Jordan Love look? Because this can really change a lot of things in the future. This could start a whole domino effect for Green Bay and how they move forward at that quarterback position. And for Jordan Love, you get the Chiefs, a defense that you can have some good opportunities against. Devontae Adams is supposed to be back. You have your full strength of guys. It's an interesting matchup there. And eyes will continue to be on the Chiefs to see if at any point they start to look like the Chiefs of old. You better here. You're at home against a backup quarterback. Right? You better start to do some good things if you're Kansas City. This was supposed to be the game of the week. I still think it's very intriguing without Aaron Rodgers. It adds another element. Maybe the quarterback play won't be as good, but I'm very curious to see Jordan Love in his first career start, how he looks on the road in Kansas City. Then we get to the top two games of the weekend. Let's shift back to college. Number 2 on my list is Wake Forest, UNC. When these two teams played a year ago, they scored a combined 112 points. You have two of the better quarterbacks in the country. Sam Howell has not played great this year. Hartman has for Wake Forest. But I think we could get a little bit of what we saw last year. A lot of points scored, back and forth game, good quarterback play. Wake Forest is an underdog for a reason. Not an easy game for them, and they're a top 10 team. They need to continue to win out. How real is Wake Forest? This may be the best test for them so far this season. So I'm very interested to see that game. I think we could get some more fireworks and a lot of points between those two, like last year, which was one of the wilder games we had. And that takes me to number 1 along the same lines. A game that may not get enough attention this week, but I think it's the most interesting game of the football weekend. I'm looking forward to watching it tomorrow. Liberty and Ole Miss. You get Hugh Freeze in his return to Ole Miss. You get Hugh Freeze against Lane Kiffin, two almost like villains in the eyes of many in college football, and also two offensive masterminds. You get two quarterbacks that are believed to be maybe the two best quarterbacks in this draft class. You're going to get a lot of points. I don't know. I should have looked up the point total. I don't know what it is, but these are two teams that like to score a lot. I think this is a lot of fun. I think this could be a wild game. Now, it's a noon kickoff tomorrow, but I think it could be a real wild one. Liberty and Ole Miss. Ole Miss is favored by 10. I think it's going to be fun. I think you get a lot of points. You get to see two of the better quarterbacks go up against one another. One can try to, you know, you look back a lot of times and use these matchups when you try to compare the quarterbacks. When it comes to either a Heisman race or the draft class, you go back and you look and see, oh, this quarterback, right? Vince Young beat Matt Leinart. Vince Young gets drafted higher. A lot of times you use that comp to break down the quarterbacks. You have maybe the two best quarterbacks in this draft class going up against one another tomorrow. Liberty and Ole Miss, to me, is the most interesting game of the football weekend. When we come back, we'll catch up with somebody who covers Louisville football to preview that game tomorrow for Clemson. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
I told you that I loved you time and time again. You got me crying, baby, and my tears are flowing just like rain.
Well, it's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As we get ready for the football weekend and look ahead to the games involving Clemson and the Gamecocks, as Clemson tomorrow kicks it off tomorrow night at Louisville. Clemson a four-point favorite on the road. And as always on our Football Fridays, we check in on the other side of the matchups, get the scouting report from the other side. And joining us now is somebody who covers Louisville football and does so for the Courier-Journal. It's Cameron Teague. Follow him on Twitter, @CJ_Teague. He's with us now. Cameron, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. To just dive in with a broad question as we get ready for this one. Clemson, a favorite on the road. Louisville coming off three losses in the last four. They're 500. All that is to set up my broad question of just give us the rundown for those who haven't watched Louisville. How have things gone for them so far lately? Three losses in the last four games. How have they been playing? And I guess, you know, just what should we expect from them tomorrow?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to know what to expect from Louisville. They have two losses against Wake Forest and Virginia that were 22 seconds to 18 seconds left on the clock. You lose by less than a minute to two of the best teams in the conference. And then you're in the game with NC State until about 9 minutes left. You're down one, but the offense just couldn't get anything going. So, I mean, Louisville very much has played – I mean, in the first three quarters, they very much look like a team that can compete with anybody in the ACC. They just had to find ways to close out games. They weren't able to do it against Virginia. Wake Forest and NC State did well doing that against Boston College, and you kind of saw what happens when they play a full four quarters.
Yeah, and, you know, as they get ready to take on Clemson tomorrow, we know for Clemson the struggles have been offensively. When you look at Louisville, as you said, couldn't really get the offense going against NC State, but otherwise scoring over 30 points in almost every game this season. So for Clemson, if they, you know, it's certainly not advised to try to get into a track meet with some of these teams with their struggles offensively. My question being for Louisville, you know, offensively, what should we expect to see tomorrow? How is the offense done this year as they go up against a pretty talented Clemson defense tomorrow?
Yeah, Malik Cunningham is kind of the heart and soul of Louisville's offense. I mean, he can run the ball. He's thrown the ball better this year than he was last year. Was off the last two games, but when he's comfortable in the pocket and trusting his offensive line, he's really tough to stop. And then you have a running game that's getting better every single game. The running backs, Jalen Mitchell, Trayvon Cooley, Hassan Hall. I mean, they've run the combined. Everybody's run for over 200 yards the last four games. So they're getting a lot better, and that's against a really good NC State defense. So the running game is getting a lot better. Malik's kind of been a little off in the passing game the last few weeks, but I don't think that will last forever.
On the flip side, as mentioned, you know, Clemson's offense has been struggling. They finally scored a season-high number of points last week against Florida State. And now they get ready for Louisville tomorrow, who I know defensively, you know, have forced double-digit turnovers this year, nine interceptions. For Clemson, as they go up against this Louisville defense, Clemson fans, what should we expect? Is this an opportunity for Clemson offensively to do some things? How has that defense been for Louisville this year?
Yeah, they've been really good at times and really bad at times. They've really good at stopping the run. They can stop the run against pretty mainly anybody. They've been getting after the pass a little bit when they blitz better. They lost Kytrell Clark, who's their best corner for the year, and that's a big loss to them. They lead the ACC in passes defended, but they give up, I think, the second most passing yards per game. So it's a little twofold there for Louisville. They can, when they're on, they're great, but when they're mentally making some mistakes, it's tough. But I'm curious to see how it will be without Clark in the game.
Talking with Cameron Teague, who covers Louisville for the Courier-Journal. Follow him on Twitter @CJ_Teague. Scott Satterfield is interesting to me. He comes in, has a really surprising and impressive year one, maybe a bit of a letdown in year two. Then we have, you know, at least rumors about him being tied to other jobs, maybe trying to leave, a little awkwardness in the offseason. Now that they've played here in year three, 500 records so far, what's the feeling like, you know, around the program or the fan base in terms of how things have gone so far under Scott Satterfield?
Yeah, I think the fan base is kind of torn 50-50. Like, I think some people just haven't forgiven him for the whole South Carolina thing. Some people believe he's got a young team and that they're making progress. Others believe that he's not going to be a good fit here. So it's a little 50-50 depending on who you ask. I think right now there's a very loud portion of the fan base that is like, we're not going to any games, we're not doing anything until Satterfield does something or shows us that he can beat good teams. And he gets a chance to do that on Saturday against Clemson. And I think if they beat Clemson, I think that'll calm a little bit of everybody down.
Yeah, along those same lines, I know this is a big recruiting weekend for Louisville. It's a big opportunity. I saw, as you wrote, you know, more than 60 recruits are expected on campus. It's not the same Clemson this year as years past, but it is still Clemson. It is still that name.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, how important of an opportunity is this to try to get Clemson while they're down and beat, even if it's not the same Clemson Tigers, still get a win against Clemson at home tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, I think Louisville is banking on that. I mean, they're hoping to get a pretty good fan base to show up. Louisville struggled. I think everybody really struggled with attendance this year, but Louisville struggled with attendance. They're hoping to get a big crowd for the recruits. And I mean, if you beat Clemson, it's a game changer for everything right now. So I'm curious to see. I mean, that changes the entire narrative of a season if you are able to beat Clemson.
Clemson's favored by 4 on the road. As someone who's covered Louisville and covering the conference, were you surprised at all with that number that Louisville is still an underdog at home or against Clemson, or do you think that's fair?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, Louisville just hasn't done everything it's needed to do to be a favorite in this game. So I'm not too surprised by that.
Let me put you on the spot. Do you have some sort of prediction? What do you think? When you sit down tomorrow at the end of the night, what are you writing about? Is it a Louisville win, a Clemson win? What do you think happens? What goes wrong? What do you expect from this game?
I've seen it so much, so I'm going to stick with what I know. I think Louisville-Clemson is going to be a good game, so about the fourth quarter, and then Louisville is going to lose it late like they have in the last, for 3 or 4 weeks. I just kind of stick to what I know until proven wrong.
So with that said, what would be the X factor? What do you think is the biggest deciding factor for this particular matchup tomorrow between Clemson and Louisville?
I think it's the run game. I think if Louisville can run the ball pretty well on Clemson, I know Clemson has a great run defense, but so did NC State. So I think if Louisville can run the ball, that'll help out Malik Cunningham a lot. And I think if Louisville can stop the run, I think you have to make DJ beat you. DJ hasn't really shown that he can beat a lot of people this year, so you have to make him be the guy. If you lose because DJ has the best game of his career, you lose. But I just think you can't let Shipley and the run game dictate the pace of the game.
Before we let you go, I know in your Twitter bio you say that you're a tortured Browns fan. What are your thoughts with the whole OBJ news? We were talking about this earlier. As a Browns fan, what are your feelings on how this whole thing has played out?
I mean, my biggest thing is I don't really know what the NFL is anymore. I've put this season out of my mind. I don't even know what you could be talking about. You know, I focus on college football. I don't know who's OBJ.
Yeah, so
what are the Browns?
That's kind of how I feel. Moved on from the Browns for the year, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it seems like that may be the life of a Browns fan.
Yeah, very much so.
Also, by the way, also while we have you, before we let you go, I've been under fire for the way I pronounce the Bengals. And also, my producer specifically gives me a hard time for how I pronounce Louisville. As someone who covers the team, what's the proper way to say Louisville?
It's Louisville. You got to, like, say it like you have a bunch of marbles in your mouth. Louisville.
Louisville. So I guess that's
Louisville.
All right. Yep.
Like that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And even a University of Kentucky fan will say it's Louisville. Just like a South Carolina fan will jump your case if you pronounce Clemson, Clemson.
Yeah. Well, I get that one. I say that one correct, which is good because I say that more often, but some of the other teams I don't say properly, I suppose. He's Cameron Teague on Twitter at CJ_Teague, covers the Cardinals for the Courier-Journal. And appreciate the insight, Cameron. And enjoy that one tomorrow. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Pleasure's all ours. Cameron Teague. I'm curious what other words that I don't necessarily say incorrectly, I'm not going to go that far, but that are like a pet peeve that annoy people. Because apparently the Bengals thing is one of them.
Now, this is why I call Clemson Louisville, I call it the mispronunciation bowl.
Yeah, that's what we got.
Because it'll often be, they'll say it's Clemson against Louisville.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not that bad. The other one that annoys me, and hey, maybe I'm wrong in all this, I always say Dabo, and I always thought his name was Dabo. I hear a lot of people call him Dabo. That drives me crazy. I don't know why, because he's so well known, right? Like if it's a backup right tackle and you get his name wrong, okay, I get it. Nobody knows who this kid is. You don't know how to pronounce his name, but it'd be like saying Nick Saban. Like, how do you get that name wrong? It's Dabo, isn't it? I always hear people say Dabo. And that one annoys me.
I think it's Dabo because it came from that boy.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, Dabo, that.
Yeah, that's true. I always hear everyone say Dabo, right? I've always said Dabo. No one's ever corrected me. But I hear more than one person, from time to time, pretty frequently, I hear people call him Dabo. I'm thinking, Dabo? I think it's Dabo. Anyways, coming up, we'll wrap up hour two, and I'll get you my football picks for the weekend at the top of next hour. Appreciate the time from Cameron. We will preview Florida coming up next hour. Get ready for that game, Florida and South Carolina, with our opponent scouting report next hour as well. Plenty to do on a football Friday. We wrap up hour two next. It's the Mar Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Tulsa that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Cameron Teague, who covers the Louisville Cardinals. Broke it down for us, previewing the game tomorrow with Clemson. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston. However you listen to your podcast, we'll preview the Gamecocks opponent next hour. Look ahead to Florida. And which Florida team are we going to get tomorrow in Columbia? It's an interesting spot for both the Gamecocks and Florida. It's a big spot for both sides. We'll get more into that coming up next hour. The Braves championship parade ongoing. Jock Peterson throwing pearls out to the crowd. Right? It's like Mardi Gras over there, throwing out beads. Jock Peterson throwing pearls out to everybody. I saw a clip, Austin Riley saying he was surprised by how many people were out there today for the victory parade. So for the guys, you know, I said earlier, I don't know if I would go to a victory parade as a fan. I mean, you would have to do it. I would do it once, especially like, say, in my case, for the teams I root for, if the Minnesota Vikings ever win a Super Bowl, right? Like, that's something you have to go to. For the Red Sox, the first time they won the World Series, that'd be the parade you had to go to. After that, you don't need to go to any. For the Braves, it's the first time in 26 years, so I could understand why you'd want to be out there. But for the players, that has to be so much fun. Even though you're just on a bus and, you know, you're just driving around, waving it. It's just a celebration of a year of hard work, and you're the ultimate. You're the World Series champs, and you're with your teammates and therefore your buddies and your family. Right? You got your wives, your girlfriends on there. I know Jock Peterson has his brother with him on there on the bus. That's got to be a lot of fun. All the fans are there going crazy. They're having cigars, drinking beers, throwing beads at people. For the players, it has to be a real blast. Celebrate, you're handing around the trophy. I think that would be a fun time for the players. As a fan, I don't know if I want to stay out there. It's like, Times Square for New Year's. Who wants to go there? You can't move. You got to get there early. You can't even go use the bathroom. You can't see anything anyways. You see the ball, you know, for a second. You see them come by on the bus at the victory parade for a second. For the players, though, I imagine it's a lot of fun. Speaking of baseball, I was getting ready to remind you of this, and then I just saw that actually, unfortunately, it's been canceled because of weather. So if you were interested in the Miracle League annual All-Star game tomorrow, unfortunately, it is not going to take place due to weather. That was supposed to go on tomorrow morning and be broadcasted here on ESPN Radio. I'm told now because of the weather, They will not be playing those games tomorrow, and it won't be, therefore, broadcasted, unfortunately. So, I don't know if they're going to reschedule or what, but just in case, since we've been promoting it all week, if you were interested, if you were going to go out there in person, if you wanted to tune in on Saturday, you know, tomorrow, there will not be the Miracle League All-Star Games. As I mentioned earlier on the week, last year, because of the pandemic, we couldn't have the typical All-Star Game, so we had the staff here at the building play in the game. And I thought we still had the highlights in the system, so I went back and I found them, and I did not realize I had to jot, you know, I reminded myself that there was a play, Joe, where you had like a headfirst dive into third base on a play. And that was like it's like a rubber field, you know, it's like a turf baseball field. And, Joe, you laid out to get in there safely at third base.
It was done purely out of instinct.
Did it hurt? Did you get like the turf burn or anything?
A little bit on my hands. That was about it.
Yeah. For the love of the game. And I think we still lost, but you can't say that Joe didn't leave it all out on the field. Went diving into third base. I was listening back to some of the highlights we had in the system from last year, which was actually the same weekend. It was this weekend a year ago during COVID, though, so we couldn't have the kids play. So we played instead. The staff here, I broadcasted with Bobby, and I was listening to the clips, and I thought, oh, yeah, that's right. How could I forget that Joe went diving headfirst into third? And if I remember correctly, the ball went out of play. You got to score on it. I think so. It was a big thing. But anyways, we ended up losing the game. So in the end, it didn't all work out, unfortunately. So no All-Star game tomorrow, in case you were interested, unfortunately.
But we do have those clips.
Oh, do you?
Yes,
right.
We do.
All right, let's hear your dive. Let's hear how it sounded on the radio a year ago. Since we can't have the broadcast in the games tomorrow, let's flash back on a Friday to this time a year ago when Kirkman Broadcasting played in the game and Joe went diving into third base.
And a chance for Gill to redeem himself from the six runs allowed through two frames. First pitch is grounded up the center of the diamond. Joe takes a wide turn at second.
Now he's in a rundown.
Yeah, he's in a run. It's a pickle between second and third, and Joe is going to dive into third base safely, laying out for the love of the game. The throw went into the dugout, and Joe, with some heads-up base running, diving into third.
Head first slide on a rubber field.
That's how you do it.
That takes some guts. You'll regret that tomorrow.
There you go. Props from Bobby. Take some guts. Diving, laying out on the turf field. Pretty good. That was the highlight. That was the play of the game. And then our music maven, John Dixon, had quite the day. He had some ups. He had some downs. He made some good plays. All the other highlights involved John. Play any one of them. John Dixon had quite the day where he made a couple of nice plays. Also took a tumble at one point. He was our third baseman that day.
Stokes already leading 3-0. And here's Bubba in on the right side with a chance to drive in some more. Big windup in the pitch. That's a line drive. John Dixon makes the catch at third.
John Dixon with a stab. There you go.
He doesn't need a glove. Makes a nice play at the hot corner for the second out.
Right at him.
Impressive. John playing in at third base and was able to snag that snaring line drive.
He'll call it sick money because his hand hurts probably after that catch.
We won't see him for a few days.
I don't remember if he did, in fact, show up on Monday after making that great catch.
I did.
It wasn't all positive. Do you have just John falling, the last one? I don't know what it's labeled as. I think it may be that third clip in there because he also had some good plays, but there were some bad plays as well. Do you have it there or not?
Well, we're running short on time, but okay. We can do it next hour.
All right, fine. We'll take it easy on the music, Maven. So, long story short, no All-Star game tomorrow for the Miracle League, unfortunately. I'll give you my picks coming up next hour, and also we'll preview the Gamecocks game with Florida. We'll catch up with somebody on the Florida side of things. And just this idea that this is a big game for both sides tomorrow. Which Florida team's going to show up? What are we going to get out of Dan Mullen? Can the Gamecocks get one of those important wins to try to get to a bowl game this year? We'll preview that one coming up next hour as well. Hour 3 next. It's the Mora Midday Show on ESPN Radio.